on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How you doing? Welcome back. It's another edition of the YoteCast podcast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics Department. Great to have you for another episode. We keep turning it out throughout the course of the next couple of months, and this week we get a chance to talk more football. You know, as this time of year, obviously, a lot of excitement around spring sports, but there's always excitement around spring football, and South Dakota football coaching staff has turned over a little bit. There have been some new additions to that group, and last week, we introduced you to a couple of the new assistant football coaches, and we'll continue that here this week. So coming up in the show today, we will talk to Jeff Nady. He is the new offensive line coach for South Dakota, and we will also talk to Rob Schneider, who's in charge of the defensive line. So we're going in the trenches on today's episode of the YoteCast podcast. We'll get it started this week like we always do with the athletic director at USD. His name is David Herbster. David, I know you're fresh off a trip to the Final Four and back at it as you focus on what's to come here over the remaining spring for South Dakota. And I know there have been a lot of challenges. We'll get into some of that. But hopefully, with the forecast looking ahead, nicer weather on the horizon. Boy, how much easier would nicer weather make things?
Unbelievably better. Just to have some stability in it and have something that you can kind of rely on versus jumping up to 60 degrees and then next thing you know we're down to 22 and snow again. So that part's always makes the spring tough, especially for, like we've talked about, it being able to be to know for sure that you can host outdoor events and in somewhat temperate weather.
You had a chance to go down to the Final Four. You've been to that before,
yes,
right?
Yeah, a few times.
And so when you look at like this year was very different, it felt, than other years where it wasn't exactly the favorites who were playing in the Final Four.
Right.
How did the buzz around the whole atmosphere and event compare to other years when maybe the favorites are involved in that?
You know, talking to many of the people that were there from, let's say, a San Diego State or Florida Atlantic or Miami, I mean, I think the buzz was incredibly high, maybe more so than in other times, primarily because you have so many, in this case, three of the schools that had never been there before. So just the fan following at the games, how loud they were, how engaged they were, just the buzz around town. It was a really fun first time for a lot of people. And from a basketball standpoint, several really, really good games, especially in the semifinals, the Florida Atlantic San Diego State game coming right down to the last half second. So overall, I think it was a lot of fun. Especially it's always good to see coaches and administrators from other schools, meetings and different things that are happening down there, be able to catch up with some folks. But the overall buzz, I think Houston did a really, really good job of hosting it.
I'm curious your thoughts. I know that when it's all said and done, it comes down to trying to make as much money as we can. But your thoughts on using these giant football domes for a basketball Final Four versus maybe like an NBA arena, which would seat obviously less but would have a very different atmosphere?
I would say it's tough. I mean, your viewpoint, your vantage point. I mean, if people thought that when we played basketball in the dome that we were just playing in some big cavern, that's nothing compared to playing in a stadium that seats 75,000 people. I mean, I think at the finals on Monday night, there were 72,000 people there. And so there's a lot of seats that are not very good. And you've got to have at least a big video board, but you spend half your time looking at the video board and half the time looking at the court. But that said, it's also just being there, being at the arena, or being in the facility, the stadium, and just being there for the whole atmosphere and the whole environment.
Yeah, really cool. And, you know, just a few hours away, the women's Final Four was taking place in Dallas, and they did something unique with Division I, II, and III all playing their championships in the same facility, but the Final Four for Division I, and it crushed
attendance records, which is awesome to see. And we've seen around here the growth of women's basketball.
Right.
And I know that we appreciate it. And it's great to see that so many others are appreciating it as well.
It really is. Because, you know, what they've been able to do and to have a place like Dallas to be able to host it, to bring all of those different events together. And really, I think the media attention around the women's Final Four, around the teams that were in the Final Four, and even some of the last semifinal matchups to get to the Final Four were just unbelievably competitive games that leads into some great storylines coming into the Final Four. So, to see that kind of buzz, and really not only the attendance buzz, but to see the television numbers, the number of people that watched those games, that was really impressive.
Yeah. What's a must-do for someone if they've never been to the Final Four and they get the opportunity to go? What do they have to take in surrounding the event?
I think one of the big things is taking everything in and around the Fan Fest. The things that because that's typically at a convention center near to the stadium. But you're going to have, and those are all day events, but you can hear and get, not only see coaches, but see pro players, former college players. They'll typically have a couple of concerts in and around all of that. But the Fan Fest really is something that's very engaging. It's very hands-on in a lot of ways. That's one that if you're going to be a tourist, that is a tourist mecca. But be a little bit patient. And I would say, too, if you just want to see it and experience everything, go early. If you get there later in the afternoon, it's a lot of people, a lot of your closest friends. Think about Black Friday, you know, trying to go shopping the day after Thanksgiving and how crowded it is. That's what Fan Fest is like.
Yeah, I bet so. What a fun few weeks of March Madness and certainly a success on both the men's and women's side. So that was always fun to see. Looking ahead, we're seeing nicer weather. You know who appreciates that the most? Golfers. They have been in events here, and now they're getting ready for the Summit League Championships, just a few weeks away from that. But the men's golf team coming off a really good performance at TPC Deer Run.
Right. Really good finish. Really good finish for him, finishing second. I think I look at, you know, down the line this early and seeing what Hunter Rabrovich did of finishing fourth, Ben Hicks sixth, and then Max Schmidtke 11th. I mean, to finish second overall, good for them. I mean, it's tough, and they haven't exactly had some of the best conditions to practice and train out here. I think they've only been on our course, the Bluffs, maybe half a dozen times. So to be able to get out there and compete at a really, really nice golf course. Have you golfed that?
I haven't.
I have not either. It's probably not. The Bluffs is more my game a little bit. At least I feel better about knowing where, if I have any chance of finding my ball in the rough there, than I would a place like TPC John Deere.
You know, they do have a PGA event there every year.
Right.
And it's, I believe, in early July or sometime around that. And you can actually play it before and after that event so you can get PGA conditions. I think you should give that a try.
I've played the Bluffs before and after we have, like, the Pro-Am here. And that's tough enough. That's fun to be able to play, especially courses like that. And I know our guys really enjoyed it. It's now, again, like we've always talked about with golf, now it's building that consistency. And it's probably as much physical, if not even more mental, to be able to give yourself that type of confidence to be able to play through maybe some bad holes or maybe even a bad round.
And the women were down in Georgia at Kennesaw, Georgia, and competed. They finished seventh as a team.
Right. Akari finished 18th, and Molly Fossum finished 23rd. Danica finishes 32nd. But again, I always find it interesting because it's one thing to go and if you're basketball, you're volleyball or softball, or whatever, pretty much the dimensions of where you're going to play are all the same, right? I mean, the rim's always 10 feet high. It's always a 100-yard field. It's, first base is only so far away. And those things are typically consistent. Your surroundings might be different, but in golf, every single course you play is going to be different. So you have to be able to adjust and play the course and play within yourself if you're going to have any type of success.
Yeah, and the golf teams there this week, they'll play at in Omaha, mm-hmm. Stampede at the Creek. I believe that's Indian Creek Golf Course. And they have a Corn Ferry event there every year in August. So it's a good run of courses here for our teams.
It really is. And again, it's fun to be able to put them in those types of situations where you can compete like that, compete on those types of courses, to be able to get that type of experience, because again, you want all that to lead into the Summit League Championships and be hopefully at your best once you get there.
Yep, no doubt. Well, hopefully they can have a good success this week and then build on that here for a few weeks down the road. Let's talk softball. Softball's off to a great start in Summit League play. They're 5-0 in league play, and they've done all this with having home games moved away from home because of, obviously, field conditions and some projects that people have seen, the construction projects ongoing. I know it's been a challenge for softball, but, man, they're really battling through the adversity.
They really are. You know, having what they've gone through, our first two series were supposed to be home, and we played them on the road, I think, the first one in Omaha and Dakota Valley. We had to split that one up a little bit. And the second one, it was supposed to be a home stand against Kansas City. We had to go down to Kansas City to do it, but found a way to win all five of those. Our challenges with the field have really been Mother Nature centered in trying to get our field playable. But we've had some projects out there that, from taking down the old chain link backstop to putting up a netting backstop, it required new poles and a new a new setup. We'll have more of a backstop and kind of padded dasher boards behind that. But Mother Nature has not allowed us to get out there and actually do the things on the field that we need to do. We had some challenges with Mother Nature and some of those and getting up the fence posts where we had part of the infield dug up a little bit, because one morning it's 30 degrees when they start, and by the afternoon it's 60 degrees and everything turned, what was ice and frozen, then melted. Just caused a huge mess. But we're just now being able to get to the point where the field's dried out enough that we can at least start to spike it and drag it to try to help air it out and dry it a little bit. The goal right now is to get this to the point where it's actually playable by the end of this week. Knock on wood, but next week the goal is to practice on that field. But we've got some infield work to do that was damaged during putting up that new backstop that we've got. We're bringing a company in to come in and kind of skin that or fix that infield to get it to the point where it is playable. But I'm not so sure that even if the first two weekends we could have played at home, that we would have been able to play at home. We still had a lot of snow and ice in front of the visiting team dugout that hadn't melted yet. So Mother Nature has definitely put us to the test on this one.
Important to note that just because the snow may disappear, that doesn't mean the field's dried out.
No. And that's the tough part, right? Because, you got a couple inches of melt, but the tough part about that is it's still frozen underneath that. So as that stuff thaws, the water's going to come up, but you've got what was on top is going to go down, and you get to a point where you still have a frost line that isn't going anywhere right now, which doesn't allow the water to go anywhere, which then it just sits on top. And then when it gets cold again, it's just going to refreeze again. So wash, rinse, repeat a little bit. But I honestly give our staff, our grounds crew, a ton of kudos for doing everything they can to get that thing playable, as well as even trying to find alternate playing sites when it became apparent that we were not going to be able to play here. We were not going to be able to play in Yankton. It was a little bit of scramble mode. So I think we certainly made the best of it. But in the meantime, our softball team is found a way to overcome that that adversity and to fight through it.
And now this week, it's not USD's home game, but the softball team's only going to go an hour up the road versus going all the way to Fargo because, well, if people are paying attention, Fargo just got hit with another winter storm, and now North Dakota State can't play at home.
Right. I'd be very surprised if North Dakota State, even to a degree South Dakota State, will be able to get in one series this year. I mean, they still have that much snow on their fields, and you can certainly try to push that off. But at this point, the way all those fields are enclosed, you're almost going to have to scoop it off, onto something and actually get it out of the fenced-in area. So it's certainly not ideal this year.
Sure. Well, hopefully the softball team will be at home very soon. I know people will be itching to watch some softball, especially the way this team started here 5-0 in Summit League play. Last week, some football players were featured in the Pro Days, an opportunity to host Pro Days for NFL scouts right here, and sometimes that's for NFL scouts and maybe for other leagues and whatever, but we had a bunch of guys go through Pro Days and try to show their measurements and things like that and put themselves in a position to potentially extend their football careers.
Right. We had probably, Bob would know for sure, I want to say roughly 18 or 19 NFL teams represented here at our pro day. So had about 11 guys go through it. And it gives them an opportunity to kind of run through their tests, right? Their, you know, the skills test, speed test, strength tests. It is interesting to watch. It's not the most exciting thing to watch, if you've ever seen those things. But it is interesting to watch them as they go station to station. In many cases, you can have a couple different stations working, you know, maybe two stations working at once. But it is good that there's those many players that are in that position to be able to need to be evaluated. And so seeing, you know, having Alex Jensen come back, seeing Dalton Godfrey out there, Michael Scott working, he had a lot of guys that were really putting it out there. But it's just a unique opportunity. I mean, you and I have seen several of them, but if you've never seen one, it's just kind of interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. It's not as there's not all the energy in there that you might have during a game, but it's the curiosity behind it that's fun to see our guys compete in front of those types of professional teams.
I think what would be interesting is if a regular person who doesn't know a lot about pro days went and watched, they would be kind of bored, and there would be celebrations because somebody hit a jump, a best in a jump, whether it's vertical or leaping forward, whatever it may be, the broad jump. And the regular person might be like, what'd they do? You know, yeah. They might not know what they accomplished.
You're like, yeah, what just happened? I think what would be better is if we could get the media to actually participate in the 40-yard runs or the shuttles or the, broad jump.
There's bloopers for that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is.
We'll see what we can get put together.
Yeah.
Speaking of, 40-yard runs and some of that, the track team set to host an event, and finally nice weather to be able to do that. And I know they're scheduled for a couple of days, and I think we've got 3 days of track maybe coming up this week.
We do. You know, just coming off the meets in Texas at the Texas Relays and the Bobcat Invitational, now to come back and to be able to host a meet Friday and Saturday, kind of the early bird meet. And you're knocking on wood, but right now it looks like weather's supposed to be pretty good for those days. And then leading up to that, Thursday, the Vermilion High School hosts a track meet out at our track. So we're going to have three straight days of track meets. So I think each day the weather gets a little bit better each and every day, which is really, really nice. But it's nice to get that going again. And, especially coming off of hosting the indoor conference meet there at the end of February and then be able to jump right into this, it's nice just to get that action going again.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, hey, we're now a week away from calling all Coyotes. We're 2 weeks away from the spring game. April's going to go by really, really fast.
And we got to throw an Easter in there, too.
Yes.
Don't forget to hide your Easter eggs.
I'm a better hunter than a hider.
Are you?
Yeah. And especially when, everybody else is a little shorter than me and dominate those Easter egg hunts.
That's why I did bad.
That's right. I did have one question submitted for Ask the AD, and it's about leading up to the spring game. Taylor Street, will that be fixed before the spring game?
Boy, spring game's, 2 weeks away?
Yeah.
And for those that don't know, Taylor Street is the one that's right in between the W.H. Over Museum and the tennis courts. And it's a little beat up right now. There's a small area of pretty significant potholes. To be honest with you, I don't know if it's going to get fixed before the spring game. I would just tell people when you're coming in there, drive slow. I think, we're really trying to take a look at probably let weather get a little more consistent before campus is really going to start addressing the issues with potholes.
Well, and the reality is here in a little over a month, there's going to be a lot less traffic in these areas where they can get in there and get those fixed a little easier.
Yeah, exactly. Because really, I think right now, if you're really going to fix that, you're going to need to shut it down for a day or two.
Sure.
Even if it came down to just patching it, there's some challenges within there. Because I think the potholes are enough that you would really need to shut it down for a day or two if you really wanted to attack it.
Drive slow and watch where your tires are going.
Exactly.
That's the advice. David, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, John. Appreciate you, man.
He's David Herbster, the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. Well, as spring football continues, we continue our journey through introducing you to assistant football coaches who are new to USD. We'll be trying to guide this team to back to the playoffs in the fall season. Right now, they're grinding through the spring season. This week, I had a chance to catch up with the new offensive line coach for South Dakota. His name is Jeff Nady.
Jeff, first off, welcome to USD. I know you've been here getting settled in and now diving into spring ball. How has the adjustment been to you getting involved with USD?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. The adjustment's been terrific. This is a really great place. It is a college town, and, you know, it's one of those places you drive around downtown and you see the Yolt flag flying everywhere, and that's really encouraging. And I know the Dakota Dome gets rocking, and just from getting here and starting football standpoint, we got a great group of guys, we got a great staff. Coach Nielsen is a proven winner, longtime head coach, great leadership, and our guys are really, really bought into a couple new faces on offense specifically, and they've been a joy to be around.
You know, you talk about the Yolt flags, and there's a lot of passion, obviously, for USD in this community of Vermilion. They're very different sizes, but similar in that regard to where you came from in the Reno area where Nevada is, and you played at and coached at. I know there's a great deal of passion there. Very different sizes of towns, but have you been able to compare the passion yet?
Yeah, it definitely. The towns are smaller, like you mentioned, or the town here is smaller, like you mentioned, but those flags are flying. And, you know, my association with Nevada, having my father, he was a pitcher there. My Uncle Jay's in the Hall of Fame. Our 2010 team is in the Hall of Fame there. I grew up going to University of Nevada football games and, you know, being local and going to play there. Was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it's got the same vibe here in Vermilion. You know, as far as you see some young athletes wearing Yolt stuff around town, and you hope they aspire to one day join the Yolt life.
You know, it's amazing. You grew up not far from Reno, and obviously ended up playing there. You talked about going to football games. What did that mean to you? Was that always kind of the dream for you to play there, or did it just kind of happen?
You know, it was, and I was in the stands as a youngster, and my family just had a lot of pride for the University of Nevada, and it was an honor to go play for Chris Ault. Coach Ault he's a Hall of Fame head coach, and we won a ton of games there, and in 2010 finished ranked number 9 in the country. It was a dream come true to play there, and it gave me the opportunity to play at the next level in a few NFL camps and some arena football stuff from there. So the opportunity was there, but what I really remember the most is the amount of family members I had in the stands, and bringing that group together. My mother has 6 brothers and sisters, and seeing that entire family up there along with my dad's side as well that would come in and watch, that was a real joy, just bringing the family together.
You talked about it a little bit, but you were a member of one of the great teams from Nevada, and when people think college football and rankings, Nevada's not the team that really jumps to your mind. You think of always being in the top 25. What was that experience like to have them up there in the top 10, top 15 all season long, or a lot of the season, and just playing on one of the great teams there?
It was awesome. The town was buzzing. The community was behind us. But one thing that that I take away from that and how to have success at the college football level is we dominated the line of scrimmage, from an offensive line standpoint. And that's stuff that I carry with me every place that I go, and as the offensive line coach here, I want people to come to games and see a physical brand of football. I want to see the line of scrimmage won, by the Yotes, offensively and defensively. Coach Johansson does a terrific job, and his defense gives us headaches just here in this spring ball. But that team, in 2010, we were a more physical unit than a lot of teams that we played, and that led to success. And that's something that we're working here in Vermilion to get the big boys up front, making sure that they are imposing their will and controlling the line of scrimmage.
You were an all-conference offensive lineman. That gave you the opportunity to go to camp, a couple of NFL camps, Atlanta, Jacksonville. What was that experience like for you?
I mean, it is a high-stress environment. Every snap, every day, people, you hear about it as a player. You hear about, every snap somebody's, they're feeding their families, and that's real. It's a very real representation of NFL training camp, and, it's a physical brand that, I think, the Nevada football way that we did and that will be now the USD way is a brand that I think translates over to the NFL. There is a toughness aspect both physically and mentally that, I believe in coaching and, definitely helped me in those camps and even continue into arena football. But that brand is, it's a 7-on-7 generation. And I believe if we can get 5, 6, 7, 8 guys to buy into that physical dominance, there will be some success.
How different was the NFL camp than maybe what you had pictured it before going there?
Great question. The structure is posted. It's told to you, but there's not a lot of guys, helping you through things. As a college football coach, we're dealing with young men. We help them socially. We help them academically. And we help them, get to the training room, make sure that lifts are going good, making sure that they're hydrating, making sure that they're eating. You are required to grow up fast. That was, I guess, the biggest surprise was everybody was about their business. You assume that a little bit of that stuff's going on, but how you get your job done is completely on you, and there's not a lot of hand holding that goes on there, and it's something that it's an eye opener. It's you. How can you accomplish your task and your goals in an efficient manner, and that's how you're being evaluated.
You went on to play in the Arena Football League, and I think it was 3 organizations over the span of about 2 years. What was the adjustment to Arena Football?
Arena Football was an absolute blast. I think the game is something that, if it was played in the correct time of year, people would watch it. I really do think that it's a high-flying, high-scoring, a lot of passing yards, and that's what people come to see, right, is the deep ball. And that stuff exists in Arena Football. It was a ton of fun. It was a great league at the time. The AFL is now no longer. But that, that adjustment, it's still blocking. It's still taking pass sets, and a little adjustment there is they have a tight end, a center, and a guard. So, and I also played a little bit of fullback. So catching a professional touchdown was a joy, and I had my family there to watch that. That was a special moment that I look back on in my playing career that I think, puts a smile on my family's face seeing me catch a touchdown at 330 pounds. So it was fun.
Well, that means maybe some offensive line passes in the mix here, huh?
They're not eligible, but we can do some throwbacks and we can do some laterals. We can get tricky, and we have the athletes to do it. So we just got to build some trust with those guys offensively, and maybe you might see some of that coming up here in the fall.
When your playing days were done, you got into coaching, and you went back, I believe, to Nevada and spent a little bit of time with strength and conditioning before working with the offensive line. Were you in between deciding on what to do there with either maybe going the strength and conditioning route or the offensive line, or how did that work?
I got into strength and conditioning totally out of just the appreciation for the strength staff that I had at Nevada. I was a 240-pound, 235-pound basketball player, defensive end, tight end in high school. I was being recruited as an offensive tackle. I didn't realize, how much they had on their plate as far as transforming athletes into what they want to become. And I told them my goals. I was clear about my goals that I wanted to play at the next level. And what that group did for me, I was so thankful for that. I knew I wanted to get my start there. It's the most hands-on. I think you can really affect a student athlete both physically and mentally, you know, in the strength and conditioning realm. And you look at times like summertime, you know, that's all they see. You know, and I truly believe a head strength coach is an assistant head coach. They get just as much time with the student athletes as an actual head football coach does. So that appreciation is what got me into strength and conditioning. And I make sure our guys take that very seriously and how they eat, how they hydrate, their mobility, all that stuff, I think has allowed me to, increase the well-being of the student athletes that I coach. And all that stuff stems at a core of strength and conditioning. But, to answer your question, I did go back and forth on being a position coach, and a strength and conditioning coordinator. I just got, offered to have my master's degree, my GA ship at the University of Nevada. I jumped on that and fell in love with coaching, and I don't want to go back.
You obviously spent a little bit of time at Nevada then, and then went on to Fort Lewis College in the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference, which recently has been a really good football conference in Division II. What was your experience like at Fort Lewis?
You know, at that Division II in Fort Lewis, beautiful town in Durango, Colorado. You got to wear a lot of hats. It's not as staffed as a lot of places, and especially there at Fort Lewis. Football isn't the highest priority there, and so there's a lot of hurdles to work around. But it also forced us as coaches to be creative on how we can better our student athletes. And I was an offensive line coach there. I coached running backs, tight ends. I did the strength and conditioning. I coordinated in 2019. I was an assistant head coach there. I was a recruiting coordinator there. You wear a lot of hats there at that level, and it gives you the broad scale of everything that's going on, from travel to off season, housing. I mean, you're dealing with all those people on campus and making those relationships work, excuse me, is it's how you grow in the profession. And I'll tell you what, I'm not looking forward to those 13-hour bus rides any longer. We had three in a season, and those started to wear me out. I can't lie.
Yeah, the long bus rides, they'll get to you, no doubt. It doesn't matter if you're a player, coach, or support staff, they'll definitely get to you. You went back to Nevada, now you're here. You look back at your time, and obviously your career, you're young in your career, opportunity to do a lot of great things. What have you learned to this point that you feel like really gives you an opportunity to continue to excel with what you're doing and what you can bring to USD?
The more I coach every year, one of my coaches told me, coach them hard, love them harder. I believe the relationship aspect right now with your student athletes is more important than ever. This generation of athlete needs somebody that has their back and will fight for them and go to bat for them. And I do that with all my players. It's, I tell my players I love them. I know that's, some of them I can see that's foreign to hear somebody tell that to them. But, I sat in those chairs. I have a ton of respect for somebody that gets up earlier than their peers, goes and works out while all their roommates are asleep, and then goes to class and then returns back to study some more football. And that's possibly having a practice on top of that. So I respect what those guys go through. And those relationships, I think, are at the core of how I want to build an offensive line room.
You look at South Dakota's current offensive line, and obviously some guys back from last season, not everybody, but you look at this group. What do you see out of it right now, and what is this group need to work on here in the spring so it's ready to go in fall camp?
They are a very willing group. They are guys that want to be good at football. They take it very seriously. They're focused in meetings. It's not an assignment error heavy group, which means their studies, on their own time, they're checking that box. What the step that they need to make is making sure that every period is taken as serious as the last one. It's part of a transition, meaning there's a lot of thinking going on. But when they're confident in what they're doing, they're playing fast, they're playing physical, and they're trying to finish blocks. And having that be on a consistent basis is the number one thing that, that we want to accomplish this spring. Is, you know, we coach technique here for, without a question, but not at the expense of effort and violence. They know that, and that's going to be our number one priority, is to make sure that we are a physically imposing unit with the will to win.
You're an accomplished offensive lineman. You've spent years being a coach, offensive line, some other things. What are maybe the main qualities that you need to see out of offensive line if they're going to be successful?
Well, I'm an athlete driven offensive line coach. What I mean by that is, when we're looking for recruiting, we want to make sure guys have some quick twitch. We want to see some guys, you know, play nasty on the football field. But you know, in our offense and in how USD wants to control the football, be smart with the football. We run, you know, we're very multiple, and that is going to force us to play offensive linemen that are athletes. We are not, you know, we don't want to be just big guys that step left, step right. It's guys that we want to demand a lot, and at the core of that is going to be their ability to move in space while still possessing the quality to move somebody off the line of scrimmage.
This program is coming off of a tough year last year. No secret about that. There's been some turnover on staff. There seems to be a lot of excitement, though, still around USD football, especially in the building. What excites you about what this program can accomplish this upcoming season?
You know, I love that you brought that up, because when I was talking with Coach Nielsen as I was, you know, in the hiring process, the group that he brought in here and just our conversation back and forth and the trust I gained from him early in this process, you know, I knew that there was going to be some great guys in here. And, you know, it has blown me away with this group of men that have come together from a football mind standpoint and gentlemen off the field. These guys are intelligent. Every single one of them knows 11-on-11 football and bring great ideas in every staff meeting that we sit in. I'm a better football coach just in the short time I've been here with all the great football minds that have been put together on this staff. And it's exciting because I think the kids are starting to notice. The kids are starting to see when it's done right how successful they can be offensively, defensively, and in the kicking game. And just watching them slowly continue to – the light bulbs going off of their buy-in has been very, very encouraging.
It's exciting times always around spring football, and I know people will be excited around the fall. Thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Again, welcome to USD, and we're excited to have you and see what you can bring as part of this staff.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you for having me.
He's Jeff Nady, the new offensive line coach for the University of South Dakota. We're glad to have him at USD, and excited to see what kind of work he can put in with that group up front, who obviously is paving the way for the running back and more importantly, protecting that quarterback. So we'll see how things go for the offensive line at Jeff Nady at South Dakota. Rob Schneider is also new to the University of South Dakota. He'll do the other side of the big fellas up front, the defensive line. And Rob Schneider and I had a chance to chat this week about him joining the staff at South Dakota.
Rob, first off, welcome to USD. I know it's been an adjustment for you as you get settled in, and I'm sure very quick moving with getting a job, trying to get moved, spring ball starts, not a lot of time to take a breath there.
No, no doubt. And with a fiance who was not prepared for a move, you know, I think it took a little bit of recruiting on my end, but excited to be here, you know, really enjoying everything so far and you know, excited to keep working with these guys throughout the spring.
Football has been a big part of your life. You were part of LSU football, not only as a coach, but as a player and opportunity to walk on there. What was that experience like for you?
You know, that was an incredible experience. You know, I never saw that coming, you know, ever in my life. And it was something that I was super grateful for. You know, I just tried to get my best every single day there as a walk-on. You know, I think there's a lot of similarities of being a coach. You know, I think a lot of important qualities in a great walk-on are the critical qualities in a great coach. You know, showing up ready to work every day, giving your all in every area, and, you know, having that chip on your shoulder, knowing that everything you do is for the benefit of others, and pushing a room, creating competition. Those are all things that I think as you foster as a coach, you know, you can learn a lot from great walk-ons who give you that competition and effort and attitude every single day. But, you know, doing so at LSU, you know, is an incredible blessing. Playing for Coach Les Miles, he's a guy that's still near and dear to me today. He's a guy that's been incredible to me. He's gave me my first opportunity to play college football, gave me my first opportunity to coach college football, and he's believed in me, you know, from the start. And, you know, I'm really, you know, just grateful for everything that he's done for me and, you know, been willing to put me in situations to succeed.
You know, you talk about being a walk-on, and I always think it's amazing. Some of these guys, they walk on, and when you're a walk-on, let's be honest, you're not the prized possession. You got to work your rear end off to get an opportunity, and really, first and foremost, gain respect from coaches and other players. Walk us through that process of just grinding through it and trying to put yourself in a position where, you know, people – no longer look at you as just a walk-on.
Yeah, definitely. I think at a place like LSU especially, where you've got five-star recruits and you know, guys that were sought after by a lot of different schools, to be the guy that's lowest on the totem pole there, I mean, you're pretty far down from the guys at the top. So, you know, in terms of talent, you know, I think it's hard to compare yourself to a five-star recruit, but at the end of the day, you can have a five-star attitude and five-star effort, and I think bringing that every single day is what gains you that respect. It's not backing down. You know, even though, you know, it's pretty easy to figure out who's the best athlete and who's not, I think as a walk-on, you know, you have to treat yourself, you know, or even hold yourself to a higher standard than everybody else. You know, you have to treat yourself like you are that five-star guy, but know your place. You know, you have to understand your role on the team and, you know, fight every single day for every opportunity. And I think your consistency with that, just your persistence and effort and attitude, eventually those things are recognized, and it, you know, it comes on a consistent basis. That's where that respect comes from, I believe.
You know, you go through your career, and then at some point you decided to get into coaching, and you were a student coach. What led to that transition?
You know, I always knew I wanted to coach. You know, I knew that was something, you know, from a young age, that I loved football, I loved the game, and I wanted to stick around the game somehow, some way, and knew I wanted to coach, but honestly didn't think it would be realistic. I didn't, you know, I know this is a competitive business, and luckily I know it firsthand now, but you know, at the time, you know, I was really looking to do anything I could, and that was where I found value. So, you know, doing that, you know, was a blessing. It was exactly what I wanted. And I had an opportunity to learn from a lot of great coaches, learn from some incredible coaches. And, you know, after I finished up, you know, I was able to continue volunteering at LSU and was searching for my first job and, you know, was asking guys around the staff that, you know, that were well-connected and been in the business for a long time if they had any advice or could help me with you know, seeking a job in the business. A first job especially. So you know, I had an opportunity. I was really fired up. You know, I had an opportunity to go coach some JUCO ball, and you know, for me that was incredible. And it was an opportunity to go get on staff and start learning. And you know, shortly after that, I get a call, and LSU had a spot for me. So you know, I didn't end up making it to the JUCO, but went home for a small vacation, and you know, I had to pack up and return very quickly to go sign that paperwork and get to work. So again, that was a credit to Bradley Del Pivito, who was our special teams coordinator and our outside linebackers coach at the time. You know, he was a guy that I was trying to bust my tail for and just provide value. And sure enough, he used one of his special team spots to get me in. And, you know, I was able to work with him in special teams and defense. And you know, really that was, you know, the blessing of a lifetime, just getting my start there. I definitely was not qualified at the time. I thought I knew some ball, but really looking back, I had a lot to learn and a a long way to go. And, you know, fortunately, I had great people that were around me that wanted to see me succeed, wanted to see me grow, poured into me, and, you know, allowed me to bust my tail for them. You know, really, really grateful for that. But, you know, really, I couldn't have told you that my journey was easy or predictable at all. You know, a lot of things I never saw coming. I mean, ended up here and did not see that coming, but I'm extremely grateful, blessed, and fired up to be here. So, you know, that's the nature of the business. But at the end of the day, you know, I think what enabled me to get my first chance was just having that walk-on attitude as a coach.
You know, you look back at – you get back into the fold at LSU, and 2016 was a really great year. Obviously, defensively, one of the best in the country. I think top five nationally that season. What do you take from that experience? You know, you're trying to learn the coaching realm. You're watching one of the great defenses in the country. What do you take from that experience as you've built since then?
Yeah, well, definitely learned a lot from every. You know, every facet of that experience. And I learned from the coaches, you know, how to manage rooms, how to manage personalities, and most importantly, teaching on the field. I think Dave Aranda is an incredible defensive coordinator, one of the smartest guys I've ever met in any field. You know, if he had a doctorate degree, I'm sure that he could operate on anybody and you know, save lives. The guy's just a genius. So, you know, working for great coaches like Coach Aranda, Coach O, and, you know, my mentor today, Pete Jenkins, who, you know, I have credit for everything that I bring to the table, is something I've learned from him and have grown, you know, from my experiences with him. So, you know, some incredible coaches. I could list a lot of different guys. You know, we had our DB's coach, Corey Raymond, and we had our outside backers coach at that time was Dennis Johnson, who is, you know, very, very close and dear to me. You know, when I started and I got hired, he was a GA and I was in an analyst role. And, you know, when Coach O became the head coach, he promoted his GA and got to see him go through that transition. And, you know, really, really proud of that opportunity to work alongside a close friend like that and have that success. But I think what I learned the most was just, again, just how to develop guys from the ground up. I think working with Pete Jenkins, you know, they call him the godfather of D-line, and I don't know if he would like it if you called him that, but at the end of the day, he's the GOAT. He's the greatest coach of all time, and I think that applies to you know, a lot of different areas. I think he's taught me a lot about teaching and how to break things down in a progression and make things accessible to players, but being detail-oriented enough to get exactly what you want and make sure that they conceptually understand exactly what you're trying to teach. I think, you know, it's something that gets lost in coaching a little bit, the details. But working for Pete, you know, those details never go overlooked, and, you know, it's about everything that we do.
You know, you look at your career, and obviously you spent a little bit of time at Missouri, and then you went back to the New Orleans area and were a part of a couple of high schools. And it's an interesting move because you're working with Power 5 schools. You go back to the high school level, and maybe that was just to get back to the New Orleans area. But people might look at that and kind of wonder, what was the pull to go from a Power 5 school back into the high school realm?
Yeah, well, I can tell you this. You know, I've been extremely fortunate to work for a lot of great coaches, and I believe that's prepared me to do a great job here at South Dakota. But at the end of the day, and that time, you know, I felt more prepared than ever to go do it on my own and be able to go prove it to the world that I can do it. And, you know, not as an assistant to the coach, but as the full-time guy running the show. And that was important to me. I needed to get that experience. I needed to go do that for myself. And I think it's enabled me to do a great job here. You know, I think at that time, you know, my fiance being a New Orleans girl and wanting to be in New Orleans for a time, I think it made sense. You know, I had opportunities to go coach ball, to lead group, lead men, and also be close to my fiance. But she understands that, you know, our ambitions lied in college, and the right opportunity, you know, finally came that I was ready to get back and felt comfortable with the staff and the program, and felt like it was something that was worth uprooting New Orleans and coming here to come win and compete and recruit our tails off to build a championship program here.
What made this
that opportunity for you, a worthwhile opportunity to move to an area where you probably never really had it in your top five list of places to live. But obviously as a coach, you're open-minded, right, to where you end up. What made this an attractive spot for you to make that leap back into college football and make it the next step in your journey?
Yeah, well, I think it checked all the boxes for me. You know, number one, it had to be a place that I knew had the potential and capacity to win at a high level. And I know this place is well supported and well loved by the fan base and you know, great football all around here. You know, Coach Nielsen was a guy I admired from afar, had a lot of success over his career, and I knew that he was somebody I could learn from and continue to grow. But having a great head coach like Coach Nielsen, you know, that told me this program's got stability and is heading in the right direction in all the areas that it needs to. So that was number one. And number two, you know, ability to coach and teach what I do best. You know, they were looking for a guy that teaches the same principles. And, you know, credit to Pete. You know, I feel like, you know, I can do that at the highest level, and you know, and I'm, you know, happy and excited to be doing that here. So those two things were really critical, that I had the freedom to coach and use my philosophy, which is good because it's a shared philosophy, right? And then three, you know, this is a competitive conference. You know, this is Division I football, probably the best conference in FCS. I mean, it's you know, great football here. A lot of draft picks coming out of this conference, and a lot of eyes on this conference. So, you know, to me, it was worthwhile in that regard as well. And also, you know, really bonded with Coach Johansson and Coach Nielsen through the interview process, and really grew to enjoy speaking with them and spending time with them. Just talking back and forth, and I realized that there's a lot of good people within this program that would make it easy to move, you know, away from a place that I was calling home and build a new home here. So I think those four things were the most important things. And you know, you always see coaches that take new opportunities and maybe move around a little bit, but the people make the biggest difference. So you know, I think the fourth one, you know, I can't really emphasize that enough. You know, I was really excited about the people that I'd be working with and working for.
You know, when you mentioned our conference, the Missouri Valley Football Conference, and people who are tied to this conference like to compare it at our level to the SEC, where you spend a lot of your time as a player and coach. And then there's people in college football that have SEC exhaustion, right? They're tired of hearing about the SEC all the time. So from somebody who's been around it a lot, is it the Mecca of college football?
We'll see. I mean, we're trying to build that here. You know, I would like Vermilion, South Dakota to be the Mecca of college football. But obviously very competitive conference, a lot of great tradition and history in that conference as well. But there's nothing you can find down there that you can't find here. And again, you know, I'm focused on building a championship, high level, high intensity program here. And you know, I think to me that all starts up front with the D-line, so I take a lot of that upon ourselves up front.
Seems like obviously you got to have talent, but really got to have depth on that defensive line. When you're looking at the defensive line, what are the qualities that you need to stand out for you to feel like you can get that defensive line to the next level?
Definitely. I think, you know, size is something that you can't teach, so you always want to look for that. You prefer size if you can get it. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking for athleticism. I'm looking for things that show up on film, such as, you know, great get off in the pass game. Some quick twitch, able to change directions quickly and not waste any steps. You know, I think those are all really important things, and obviously strength, those are important things, but we can always put that on guys here. But more than anything, you know, I'm looking for effort. Is this a guy that I'm going to be able to trust to go out there and give us everything he's got? Does he love football? I think those things just show up immediately when it comes to effort, you know, and straining to the ball, straining to finish, playing through the whistle is something that we've talked about, you know, a lot of places I've been, not just to the whistle, but through the whistle, a guy that strains the finish and everything he does. But at the end of the day, you know, I think the athleticism piece, the size piece, and really the personality and love for football piece all become important. I think you watch the film and you really fall in love with some guys on tape, but until you get to know them, you know, it's hard to really determine whether or not they'll be a fit in your room or fit for your team. I think more than anything, you need guys that want to give it all and want to be here and want to learn and grow and get better. You know, I think if you got the athleticism and the attitude, attitude, you know, I can get you there. You know, I think even if it's not necessarily the athleticism, I've been a part of some really great rooms where, well, that was probably our biggest deficit, athleticism, but they were the most dominant rooms because of that attitude towards work and their buy-in.
You know, when you talk attitude, one of the things that I think the defensive line has to have, probably underappreciated from many, is they've got to be selfless individuals, because the D-line's going to get their stats, but sometimes they're there to chew up blockers so that the other guys can get in there and make the stop. Is that something that you emphasize?
No, definitely. I think defensive line, you know, from my perspective, is the most team-oriented position on the field. You know, I think there's a reason why you see some great head coaches come from coaching defensive line, because you have to be team-oriented. I think a lot of the stuff that we do, you know, enables us to make plays, but we have to understand when it's our opportunity to make plays and when we need to keep somebody clean. For the sake of the defense and the team. You know, I think for us, you know, it's something we always talk about, but doing your job is the most important thing. And if your job is to press that guard who's working up to that linebacker, and I can get a run through with that backer because I kept him clean, you know, I call that a factor grade on our grades. You know, to me, that's a play that you made. And it might not show up in the stat sheet on the you know, on the ESPN page or the you know, Coyotes website, but at the end of the day, you made that play because you did your job. You know, you helped this defense, and at the end of the day, you know, stats are great. You know, I'm all for goals and trying to lead the league in different areas, but at the end of the day, you know, to me, it's the stats that don't show up that make the biggest difference. Guys doing their job and affecting plays. You know, for example, one thing I talk about all the time is it takes all four guys to get the sack. You know, if one guy's not doing his job, that's a chance for that quarterback to escape. So when we get a sack, everyone gets a factor grade on that. If you're in and you do your job, that's a factor grade, and that's as good as a sack to me. You know, it doesn't matter who gets that quarterback down. It matters that we got him down.
Yeah, no question about it. You look at the room that you kind of inherited, and there's some new pieces to that defensive line group. As you have started to work with them in the spring, what excites you? Number one, what excites you about the group? And number two, what do you need to see in the next couple of weeks to feel good going into fall camp?
Yeah, you know, this is a really talented group, and a lot of guys with some experience too. A lot of guys coming back, and you know, even the young guys excite me because they're extremely talented. I think, you know, credit to this staff before I got here, did a great job recruiting all these guys and bringing these guys in. I think, you know, for us, you know, it's just cleaning up a lot of technical stuff, a lot of stuff that that is pretty common. You know, you see at different programs, and a lot of stuff I've had to correct in the past, just in terms of footwork and hand quickness and hand placement, eye discipline, and then, you know, really learning how to attack pass sets in the pass rush game, understanding how to make that offensive lineman wrong no matter what he does, and dictating the terms with your speed off the ball. I think all those things, I'm seeing improvement every day. I'm seeing guys focus on that improvement and really making strides in different areas, just baby steps. And, you know, none of these things happen overnight, but I'm excited. I think to take the next step, we just got to keep getting sharp with all those things and form our habits. You know, to me, you know, you can't be robotic on that field. And what we do is we try to form habits, so when you're out on that field, that's what shows up. So again, I think we just got to keep working, keep our heads down, and do the work, and I think everything else will take care of itself. But again, talented enough to reach all of our goals and accomplish a whole lot here. So again, we just got to do the work, and I believe that these guys are more than capable of doing so.
We're excited to see the development of the defensive line. Rob, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time. Greatly appreciate it. Welcome to USD, and good luck coaching this group.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
He's Rob Schneider, the new defensive line coach for the University of South Dakota, and obviously that has proven, especially in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, to be a very, very critical area of a football team, the defensive line. You not only want to find, you know, a bunch of talent, like good talent, but you need to have depth at the defensive line position. That has had some teams very successful in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, and USD has continued to build in that area. So Rob Schneider joining the staff this year, and he'll try to work with those defensive line, see if we can get those run holes stuffed, and obviously get to the quarterback and get some sacks wherever that may work out. Time now to take a look at what's going on in Coyote Athletics. The Coyote women's tennis team is set to host St. Thomas on Friday afternoon. While track and field is at home this week, they are hosting the USD Early Bird. That track and field event is set for Friday and Saturday. So Friday and Saturday, the USD Early Bird at the Lillibridge Track Complex if you want to check out some track and field. Coyote softball will play in Sioux Falls at Augustana University. They're taking on North Dakota State. Too much snow in Fargo, so they move those events down to Sioux Falls. Coyotes and Bison will play at 4 o'clock on Friday. That is because South Dakota State and Omaha are playing a doubleheader on the same field earlier in the day. Then South Dakota State and Omaha play Saturday, one early game. South Dakota and North Dakota State will play a doubleheader on Saturday. So that's how that works. If you're interested in going to Sioux Falls and checking out the softball at Augustana University. Women's soccer set for a spring match in Omaha on Friday evening as well. They'll take on the Omaha Mavericks, so we'll see how things go there. Obviously, on Saturday, we mentioned the softball and track and field, so we'll keep an eye on all of that. And then coming up early next week on Monday, the women's golf team begins play at Stampede at the Creek. That is in Omaha, Nebraska. And they will also play on Tuesday. So they'll have a two-day event at Stampede at the Creek. And then women's tennis on Tuesday is scheduled to take on Creighton in Vermilion as well. That is what is going on. That is what is coming up in Coyote Athletics. Hopefully you can catch a game, match, or meet very, very soon. For all of your information on schedule changes, ticket information, and all of that, go to goyotes.com. Don't forget, we are now a week or less, depending on when you're listening to this, a week or less away from calling all Coyotes in Sioux Falls. Should be another really, really great red tie event in Sioux Falls. And the Calling All Coyotes event always does a great job raising the funds that we need to continue building in athletics. All right, that's it for me. I'm John Thayer. Have a great week, a great weekend, and until next time, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.